Representative Shaw, Michelle is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen, what I was simply saying at that time was that for over the years, the governors, all governors, have had the power to make appointments to local boards of trustees. And because the situation has now changed, probably in the middle of where you haven't done it in the past. You've had all of these since 2011 to do all of these things that you're doing in this bill. This just seems like a bit of overreach in my book, simply because what harm is there in letting this go on as it has been in the past? Mr. Speaker, a couple of other things, and I know that my time is about to run. Let me prevail upon the chair to ask for a point of personal privilege at this point.
Representative Michelle, we're going to take care of the business first and do personal privilege at the end. That's according to our calendar.
All right. Okay, any way you want to do it. But let me say this to you. Simply because things happen around here should not affect us to the point that when we consider legislation, when we consider things that are a part of our whole fabric, that we ought not let anything interfere with our thoughts on that. I simply say to you that this bill, taking that authority away from the governor, not because you should, the business of the day. We need to let the governor have at least, he's the titular head of education. All of you have said that. You've had an opportunity to do it over the last 9 years to make these changes. Why do you want to make these changes now? Why didn't you do it when you had the governorship? I would suggest simply, if anything, to come back and let's talk about this again in the long session when we meet almost less than a month from now and go back over this. And if you want to do it then let's try to take a look at it at that point. But to do this now is just a slap in the face of people.
For what purpose does Representative Lewis rise?
Mr. Speaker, may I ask the gentleman from Durham a question?
Does the gentleman yield?
Yes, sir, I yield. Is that the sentence you were going to read? It stood up as Stan was going
to read. He
yields. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you, Representative Michelle. I don't know if you have a constitution at your desk. Would you accept that I appear to be reading from one? I'd like to read from you or to you, please, what is Article 9, Section 8 of the North Carolina Constitution under the tab that reads higher education. If I may read this, and then if you could tell me if this sounds like what the Constitution says as best you can recall. I read, quote, "The General Assembly shall maintain a public system of higher education comprising the University of North Carolina and other such institutions of higher education as the General Assembly may deem wise." Period. "The General Assembly shall provide for the selection of trustees of the University of North Carolina and of the other institutions of higher education in whom shall be vested all the rights, privileges, franchises, and endowments hereto granted to or conferred upon the trustees of these institutions." Period. "The General Assembly may enact laws necessary and expedients for the maintenance and management of the University of North Carolina and the other public institutions of higher education." My question, sir, while I understand your point, would you acknowledge that, to the best of your recollection, that was a true and accurate reading of the North Carolina Constitution?
I will acknowledge it because I have it before me. For your information, Representative Lewis, I carry two books in my pocket every day, a copy of the North Carolina Constitution and a copy of the United States Constitution. Okay, so, yes, I know I'm very familiar with this, and I'm very familiar with the fact that the General Assembly is given the authority to have the well-being and maintenance of the university system.
For what purpose does Representative
Lewis? Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you, Representative Shelby.
If I could finish my answer.
You may.
I know what's in the Constitution. Having practiced law for some 50 years now, I'm pretty much familiar with it. What I'm saying to you is that things are being done now because you can do it, not because you should do it. We have had a good history of governance in our board, in our university system, in our system of higher education, and that has not been tampered with. Now we are going back to the old days when you are going to now appoint four trustees. The General Assembly is going to now appoint four trustees to those individual institutions, which is going to make you subject to more lobbying by more people, causing costs to rise up and down the scale. It just shouldn't be simply because we made a change in the governorship. And that's all I'm saying. You're right. The Constitution is right.
Representative Shaw, I thought you said that was all you were saying.
Mr. Speaker, but I'd like to state for the record that the gentleman answered my question by saying yes. I believe the gentleman is currently engaging in a prolonged debate.
Well, Mr.
Representative
Speaker,
Shaw, are you completed your answer to the question?
No.
Would you like to supplement it for just a moment?
Yes, because I don't know what he's trying to get. I'm trying to be as nice as I can, Representative Lewis, by, yes, agreeing with you that what you read from the Constitution is what's there on the paper that you read. Now, if you'd gone to the annotations or something, that might be something different, if you know what the annotations are. But here again, I'm just saying that what has been done in the past should not be abrogated at this point simply because there's been a change in leadership that you don't like.
For what purpose does Representative Bryan rise?
To send forth an amendment to speak the amendment.
The clerk will read the amendment with notation 3.
Representative Bryan moves to amend the bill on page 6, lines 45 through 50 by rewriting those lines to read.
Representative Bryan is recognized to explain the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is just a technical amendment to conform with a prior amendment adopted. There was a follow-up section that had the same language that needed to be amended to match an amendment we made in committee. Just a technical amendment. I urge adoption.
Further discussion or debate on the amendment? If those with lights on, maybe blink their light if you want to speak on this amendment. If not, the question before the House is the adoption of the amendment before us, designated 3. All those in favor will vote aye. All those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the machine. Yes. Clerk will lock the machine and record the vote. The ayes are 67, the noes are 35. The amendment is adopted. For what purpose does Representative Bryan rise?
To send forth another amendment to speak to the amendment.
The clerk will read the amendment.
Representative Bryan moves to amend the bill on page 2, line 50, by rewriting those lines to read.
Before I ask him to do that, I'd clarify that what we just adopted is amendment number 1. It was on the dashboard as a draft code of 3, and the draft code for this one is 5. Representative Bryan is recognized to explain the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll note I'm running this amendment for Representative Stam. you'll note that there's basically an addition of some language just to clarify in accordance with our Constitution. The entering into contracts by the superintendent is still done in accordance with all needed rules and regulations adopted by the State Board of Education. I would just argue this is a clarifying amendment, and I urge your adoption.
Further discussion or debate? Did any of those with your lights on want to debate the amendment? If not, the question before the House is the adoption of amendment number 2. All those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Clerk will lock the machine and record the vote. The ayes are 66, the noes are 36. The ayes have it, the amendment is adopted. For what purpose does Representative Brian rise?
To send forth a final amendment and speak to the amendment.
You're recognized to do that? Pardon? Oh, I'm sorry, the clerk will read.
Representative Brian moves to amend the bill on page 2, line 14 through 16 by rewriting those lines to read.
You're recognized to explain the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This amendment is another technical amendment. We made a prior amendment in committee to clarify that the staff of the State Board of Education would still be hired through the State Board of Education or not by the superintendent. It's just to clarify that the internal auditor serving the State Board of Education would also be under its control, not under the State Superintendent of Public Instruction. I urge adoption of the amendment.
Members of the Chair see several lights on. If these lights are not for the amendment, the Chair would ask that those lights be turned off. For what purpose does the gentleman from Cumberland, Representative Floyd, rise? Okay. Further discussion, further debate on the amendment? If not, the question before the House is the adoption of Amendment A3 sent forth by Representative Ryan. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. The clerk will lock the machine and record the vote. 69 having voted in the affirmative and 36 in the negative, the amendment is adopted. Chair is informed that that's the end of the amendments. For what purpose does the gentleman from Guilford, Representative Scrow, rise?
To debate the bill, Mr. Speaker.
The gentleman has the floor to debate the bill.
I want us to, again, reflect on the scope of the legislation that we are looking at before us. Amendments to the way that we handle K-12 education, amendments to the way that we handle higher ed, amendments to people who at the highest level run our state agencies. This is incredibly impactful legislation. Forget about the fact that it's incredibly partisan. It's incredibly impactful. And we have raced back to consider this in this expensive special session, and nobody's really had time to consider unintended consequences. Now, the last time that we did this, where we cobbled together a bunch of different impactful things in a special session at cost to the taxpayers, it ended up going not so great for the state of North Carolina, and we're still suffering with those unintended consequences. So I have an incredible problem with the process and the monstrosity that this process has created. Now, Speaker Moore, when you were giving your goodbyes to folks who wouldn't be returning, I guess we didn't think that we would be back here for this, you pointedly noted that I had been here for a very brief time. And that's true. I've been here for a very brief time. And so let me tell you, my perspective is one that's not necessarily always informed by what happens in this bubble, what happened 15 years ago under a different speaker and a different set of House members and who wants retribution for what. It's more the perspective of the people who just left the gallery, the people who think that we shouldn't be
Mr. Speaker, point of order. For what purpose does the gentleman from Wayne, Representative Bell, rise?
Point of order, Mr. Speaker. Would the gentleman state his remarks to House Bill 17?
The chair will give the gentleman some leeway on the debate, but would ask the gentleman to try to contain his remarks to the content of the bill as opposed to anything extra. But the gentleman has the floor to continue debating.
Sure, appreciate that. So, As a citizen of the state of North Carolina, I am gravely concerned about overhauling massive swaths of the way that this state operates, and I am also concerned about the process. And also, I know I've heard several times today people act like the people in these chambers are a nuisance. I have heard from 1,467 people across the day, resulting in these emails. Every single one of them opposed to this legislation. Okay? We cannot, in good conscience, vote yes on this. It's bad legislation, and it bears repeating that all political power comes from the people. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Wake, Representative Martin, rise?
To debate the bill.
The gentleman has the floor to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, I rise today to speak in opposition to the legislation before us, though my objections, I believe, would apply to most of the other legislation already considered and probably some of that to come after, and also the process by which this bill is advanced. We're gathered today during a season sacred to my faith and that and those of many of the faiths of members here, but it's also a season sacred in a secular sense to our great nation. On this very day in 1791, we added to our great Constitution the Bill of Rights. And yesterday marked the anniversary of the death in 1799 of President George Washington. The actions today by one political party are not wholly without precedent in our nation. In fact, President Washington was well aware of the threat posed by abusive party action to our democratic system. President Washington's farewell address marked the occasion of our nation's first peaceful and graceful transition of power. In his address, President Washington warned of the dire threat posed by political parties run rampant to our system of democracy. President Washington said of parties, "They serve to organize faction, to give it an artificial and extraordinary force, to put in the place of the delegated will of the nation the will of a party, often a small but artful and enterprising minority of the community, and according to the alternate triumphs of different parties, to make the public administration the mirror of the ill-concerted and incongruous projects of faction, rather than the organ of consistent and wholesome plans digested by common councils and modified by mutual interests." Washington continued, "However, combinations or associations of the above description may now and then answer popular ends, they are likely, in the course of time and things, to become potent engines by which cunning, ambitious, and unprincipled men will be enabled to subvert the power of the people and to usurp for themselves the reins of government, destroying afterwards the very engines which have lifted them to
unprecedented." The gentleman from Wake will suspend momentarily. For what purpose does the gentleman from Onslow, Representative Cleveland, rise?
I think we're on House Bill 17 and not on what George Washington said about politics.
The chair believes the gentleman has risen to a point of order. The chair believes the gentleman is debating House Bill 17 and is using some analogies for that purpose, so the chair will at this time permit the gentleman to continue his debate.
I'm grateful to the chair. Washington continued and finished up. "The alternate domination of one faction over another, sharpened by the spirit of revenge, natural to party dissension, which in different ages and countries has perpetrated the most horrid enormities, is itself a frightful despotism." Members, do we not see the embodiment of Washington's fears in the legislation before you today? President Washington is remembered for many things: his military leadership, his assumption of the first presidency of the United States. His greatness, though, was his willingness to put country ahead of party. Ask yourself today how you would like to be remembered by history. Vote in favor of this abusive legislation, and you will be remembered at best as a politician. But know that you will forever forego any claim that you are or ever were a subservient of the public.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Cumberland, Representative Richardson, rise?
Debate the bill.
The gentleman has the floor to debate the bill.
Members, I certainly understand and can see what you want to do. I want to caution you, and I want you to understand that one of the things that this body has always done is it's been a deliberative body. And this bill that you have put forth here is an incredibly far-reaching bill. It's one of the most important bills I've ever seen in this General Assembly. It has far-reaching implications from higher education, from secondary education, to the appointment of cabinet positions. The gentleman from Mecklenburg earlier tonight stressed a very important thing about how hard it is to get extremely good people to serve in our government, to serve on the bench, and how important it would be to give that person a vote of confidence. It absolutely killed me. It hurt my soul to have to vote no on that because he's absolutely right. What we're doing here in this bill by appointing cabinet positions and rather than going through advice and consent, we are putting these good people through almost a trial of their character. And it's not going to be good. I mean, with the age of Internet today, you can get anybody's written text. You can get anybody's written emails. You can get into their medical records. You can get into everything. We don't need to be doing this to the good citizens of our state. The governor was elected by the people. Governor Cory was elected by the people. Let him pick his cabinet, advise and consent on his picks, but to go through that process is just incredible. And to do this kind of bill, especially under what we are now, we are under the scrutiny of the federal court. And that court wrote, and I quote on page 163, that we are looking at that because of what we have done earlier, and I quote on page 163, nonetheless, plaintiffs and thousands of other North Carolinians have suffered severe constitutional harms stemming from defendants' creation of 28 districts racially gerrymandered in violation of the Equal Protection Clause. These citizens are entitled to swift injunctive relief. Now, under this ruling...
The gentleman from Cumberland will, I believe, is debating something not germane to the bill, and the chair would encourage the gentleman to contain his remarks to the bill at hand.
Mr. Speaker, can I explain why it's germane?
Is the gentleman wishing to direct to put a parliamentary inquiry to the chair at this time?
No. I'd like to continue with my argument.
The gentleman may continue with his debate, but the chair would encourage the gentleman to contain the gentleman's remarks relevant to the bill at hand.
The reason it's germane, folks, is you're about to pass far-reaching legislation that has serious implications on numerous articles of the North Carolina State Constitution. You're doing it under the guise of this ruling. You're setting yourselves up to having all this legislation stricken because you're moving too fast, too quick, and you're not giving the citizens under Article 1, Sections 12, the right to redress and come in and assemble and hear out their grievances. You're in danger of losing this legislation. You're in danger of making bad policy because it hadn't been vetted in committees. This legislation is too serious, it's too important to the people of the state of North Carolina to do this kind of quick action. Remember, people thought we were coming up here to work on the hurricane, not on this kind of far-reaching legislation. Please do not pass this legislation this fast. It is too important, too vital to the state of North Carolina. The General Assembly coming in can do this same legislation under less scrutiny and under less trouble. Please don't do this now. It's not proper and it's not right. This is too serious.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Wake, Representative Stamros,
see if Representative Richardson would yield for a question?
Does the gentleman from Cumberland yield to the gentleman from Wake?
Sure.
He yields.
Representative Richardson, you've told us why confirmation is a bad thing. Article 3, Section 5, Subsection 8 of our Constitution, I'm just going to read one sentence and ask you if you think this is a bad provision that maybe we should delete from our Constitution. The governor shall nominate and by and with the advice and consent of a majority of the senators appoint all officers whose appointments are not otherwise provided for. Do you think that's a bad provision of our state constitution?
No. I believe that advice and consent is the way to go. I don't believe we need to have full evidentiary, full cabinet hearings on the cabinet position, full hearings on the cabinet positions. There's a fundamental difference between what you've written in this legislation and advice and consent.
Second question.
Does the gentleman from Cumberland yield to an additional question from the gentleman from Wake?
Sure.
He yields.
Since that's virtually the same language as in the U.S. Constitution, what is the difference?
As you well know, the difference is one is looking, you know, just it's passing on and not getting into the relevance of the political beliefs and the philosophies of persons, going into deep detail. It's going into basically, is a person fit to hold the office?
Mr. Speaker.
It's just not as...
For what purpose does the gentleman from Randolph, Representative McNeil, rise?
Sorry, sir, but I can't hear. There are people knocking on the glass in the back.
The chair would direct the sergeant-at-arms. The chair can hear the same banging on the window, too, to ask to get those individuals to please stop disturbing the house while it's in session. The gentleman from Cumberland continues to have the floor for the response.
Also, if you look, most of the positions that the Congress and the United States have, they're appointed on high policy decisions. Our Council of State, for the most part, is elected by the people, and that's a fundamental difference. You got to let the governor have the ability to select his staff to carry out the constitutional charge of executing the laws. It's just absolutely essential. My point again being, I don't have any problem with us doing this. A lot of this I would vote for and agree with. I just think we're doing it too quick. I think we're doing it without the people's right to public hearings and to fully vet this. And I think that it's critically important that when you're doing this kind of major legislation, that you do it deliberatively and not as fast. I hadn't even had a chance to read this bill and study it, keeping in mind that our side just got this thing. You know, we really haven't had a chance to really fully vet this. It's just too fast, too quick. And it's just not wise to do it, especially under what we're under right now. It's just not smart. And I'm just appealing to your sense of fairness and your sense of right that we do this in a proper way. We've got a legislature coming up that has been voted on by the people. Let's let them do it, and let's let them do it through the committee process. Do it slow, do it deliberatively, and let's make sure we craft this legislation the correct way. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Wake, Representative Dollar, rise?
To debate the motion.
The gentleman has the floor to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I do take some exception to being chastised and insinuated about and insulted in a sense. I do want to point out just a couple of very brief things. Since I've been around this area for the last 30-some years, the issue of school governance and education governance is nothing new. It was being debated decades before I arrived in town in the 80s. There have been proposed constitutional amendments. There have been numerous court cases. There's been discussion and bills and legislation over a number of years about how we approach governance, whether it's university governance, governance of the constituent institutions, or K-12 governance, with all of the inherent sort of conflicts that you have in a Department of Public Instruction, the role of the governor, the role of the Board of Education, the role of the other, of community colleges, the independently elected superintendent of public instruction. And to me, and I'm not an expert in education like some other members are, but to me, this is the appropriate time. You do have, in this occasion, a newly elected superintendent of public instruction. This General Assembly and past General Assemblies have demanded results from the superintendents of public instruction. I think this bill strengthens that position considerably. I think people will look at the new superintendent and probably hold that individual accountable for having additional clarity and additional authority there to act on behalf of the best interest of the school children of this state. So I see nothing that is new or revolutionary here. It's simply the General Assembly working to make some governance decisions that we all hope and trust will help continue to improve education in our state, which I think is a shared goal among many, many people. The other item that I'll just note, Mr. Speaker, is when people speak of exempt positions, this is something that I've actually administered in state government in previous years. It's something I look at very closely. And I would just observe for the body and for those maybe listening that are not aware, the number of exempt positions has moved considerably over many different administrations. The General Assembly has increased and decreased and increased and decreased those numbers considerably over countless General Assemblies under differing party leadership, and you can ascribe whatever motives you want to, but that is certainly nothing new and unusual. I will point out that the current rules are not really being fundamentally changed in terms of how you treat managerial exempt, policy-making exempt. There are a whole range of reforms and what I would consider protections that have been put in over the years that are clearly maintained and are not in any way seriously disturbed by anything in this legislation. So I believe when you set aside the rhetoric that I've been hearing and look at the actual specifics of the policy underneath, you will see that it is rooted in long-standing desire for some reform in the governance of our education system, and also some long-standing policies that have moved in varying directions on a range of other issues, all well within the constitutional and long-standing legislative history of the General Assembly. And I would urge your support of the House Bill 17.
Mr. Speaker.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Durham?
Representative the gentleman Shelby, from Wake yield for a question.
Does the gentleman from Wake yield to the gentleman from Durham?
I yield.
He yields.
Representative Dahl, do you know whether or not Governor-elect McCrory was consulted as to whether in terms of what he needed in terms of exempt positions?
Is the gentleman asking whether I know specifically of whether the governor was consulted on this legislation? Is that what you're asking?
The gentleman may restate his question.
My question is, was Governor-elect Cooper given an opportunity to talk with someone about the number of exempt positions that he needed?
I'm not aware of all of Governor-elect Cooper's conversations.
May I speak on the bill second?
The gentleman may debate the bill a second time.
Yeah. Representative Dahl is absolutely right. When a new governor comes in, there are conversations held to the extent that exempt positions are awarded. When Governor Perdue left office, at that time there were 400 exempt positions there. When Governor McCrory came in, he asked for this legislation, as I understand it, and got 1,500 exempt positions. Now, nobody has said that Governor-elect Cooper has asked that number be reduced to 300, which is less than the number that Governor Perdue had when she left, the 400. And so to be fair, you want to be fair, why don't we find out from the governor-elect what his position is on the number of exempt positions needed?
We're going to take a couple of messages from the Senate just quickly. Messages from the Senate, the clerk will read.
Senate Joint Resolution 6, Committee Substitute, Second Edition, a joint resolution providing for the confirmation of Andrew Heath as Special Superior Court Judge.
Calendar pursuant to Rule 36B will be added to this evening's calendar.
Senate Joint Resolution 7, Committee Substitute, Second Edition, a joint resolution providing for the confirmation of Adam Matthew Conrad as a special Superior Court judge.
Calendar Certain Rule 36B, added to this evening's calendar. Members that benefit, we passed the two joint resolutions already. These are the identical Senate resolutions. Theirs arrived before ours did, so just under protocol, we would take theirs up. That's why theirs are being added. And additional message.
Senate Bill 4, Committee Substitute, Third Edition, a bill to be entitled an act to consolidate the function of elections, campaign finance, lobbying, and ethics under the state agency by creating the North Carolina Bipartisan State Board of Elections Ethics Enforcement to clarify General Assembly's authority to correct defects identified by the court and an appointment of distinction plans to restore partisan election for the North Carolina Supreme Court and Court of Appeals, to modify appellate review of certain cases, and to modify the term of industrial commissioners.
Bill was referred to the Committee on Elections, if favorable, finance. And members, earlier this evening we received a 36B of House Bill 10. The chair will read that title. The title is Clarify Funding Eligibility Charter Schools. This is a bill that was reported out of the Appropriations Committee. The bill will be added to this evening's calendar. For what purpose does the gentleman from Wake, Representative Jackson, rise? We are now back on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. First, I'd like to ask Representative Lewis a couple of questions.
Does the gentleman from Harnett yield to the gentleman from Wake?
I yield.
He yields.
Thank you, Representative Lewis. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Representative Lewis, these are the questions that I believe we had this morning in Rules Committee. It's my understanding that those proceedings are not transcribed. So for the record, I just wanted to ask them to you again here tonight. Who will have authority to appoint the OSHR and OSBM directors?
The governor. So after January 1st, that will be Roy Cooper.
Second question, Mr. Speaker.
Does the gentleman yield to an additional question?
Yes, sir, I yield.
He yields. The gentleman is recognized to submit the question.
Thank you, Representative Lewis. Will these positions continue to be exempt in that they will serve at the pleasure of the governor?
Yes, sir, that is correct. This bill makes no change to that.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, if I could speak on the bill.
The gentleman is recognized to debate the bill.
Last night, ladies and gentlemen, I was pulling some things and, of course, doing research on exempt employees, so I wanted to read you something I found from 2013. The new law represents an overhaul of the State Personnel Act, which has not been updated in decades and applies to the state's 120,000 taxpayer-funded public employees. The changes to the Personnel Act will add 500 more positions to the list of 1,000 positions already exempted from certain provisions of the Personnel Act, such as the right to contest termination through a formal grievance process and protection from arbitrary firings. Some of these positions will also be subject to fewer rules in the hiring process. Exempt positions fall into one of two categories, either policymaking or managerial. These changes will provide cabinet secretaries with the flexibility to respond to business and organizational needs while reducing heavy bureaucracy and red tape. It goes on to say that the concept is that this is the governor's opportunity to see if the people who are in these positions are the kind of people who will help get his initiatives going, or if he needs to get someone else. For these exempt positions, employees are necessarily political. In accordance with state law, since loyalty to the governor is reasonably necessary for the job. If these words sound familiar to you, I got this off Representative Dollar's website. But I know it's on the website nchouse35.com, and I know many of you put the same information on your websites. So these are your words. This is what you said about extending exempt positions back in 2013. I just ask you to treat us with fairness and fair play. You know, if many of you have ever been in my office, probably not, it's a small office. I have a picture on the wall. It's in a really cheap frame. It's a soccer team that I used to coach. And I keep it on the wall because it's the last year I got to coach youth soccer. That's the one thing that I had to give up to come here. I couldn't do both. I couldn't figure it out. I taught those kids to play fair. Didn't matter win or lose. You shook hands. You played fair. And that's all I'm asking for you. if 1,000 positions was good enough in 2012 and 1,500 positions was good enough in 2013, then explain to me why it needs to be 300 on January 1st of 2016. We all know the answer to that. There used to be a saying, I think someone said it on the floor one night. It was particularly late. I think it was Representative Starnes, but I'm not sure. It was, we won, you lost, get over it. Now the saying seems to be, you won, we lost, get over it. I'd ask you to treat us fairly. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
For what purpose does the lady from Orange, Representative Insko, rise?
To debate the bill.
The lady has the floor to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, in the earlier conversation we had about the appointment to the Board of Trustees, it was mentioned that we thought that there might be some unintended consequences associated with that. I think that there will be. The governor's appointments to the Board of Trustees was done for a specific purpose. After that was done, we saw a change in the atmosphere, a more cooperative, collaborative system that came about. Before then, the campuses had competed with each other a lot. They were over here a lot. So I think that you have, this is a decision that maybe you haven't thought through. This is one of those decisions that we needed to take a closer look at and have more debate on. I heard, so I'm asking the question, why? Why would we want to do this? In the last 45 years, the university systems really blossomed under its current governance structure. There's not any reason to do this except that you can. And that's what was read earlier. The General Assembly shall provide for the selection of trustees. Well, this General Assembly, back in 1972, did provide for the selection of trustees. They decided that the governor should select four of those seats in order to have a more focused system. One person who had some connection with every campus from the governance point of view. So when we take that away, we destroy that continuity between the various campuses, the connection between the various campuses to governance. And we will have more people over here, as Representative Mishaw said, again, competing in the campuses. That damages the system. Now, I think this is an unintended consequence, as we're still struggling from the unintended consequences of House Bill 2. And I think we'll struggle from this unintended consequence.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Edgecombe, Representative Willingham, rise?
Debate the bill.
The gentleman has the floor to debate the bill.
Last night, when I left here, I went home and I went to sleep. And I didn't sleep well last night. And I think I had a nightmare. But what happened was that when I woke up this morning, I thought about probably why I didn't sleep well and what the nightmare was about. It happened to be about this bill that we went through. And I said to myself, Shelley, you know, this is something that's real, something that you got to deal with. And I said to myself also, you know, this is North Carolina. And I love North Carolina. I love my state. But I know that with this state, we have a state of a lot of promises, but we also have a state that presents pain. And I said, where's the promises? And I thought about the committee meeting we was in. We were talking about the bill that we passed to aid the people of the disaster, the hurricane, the wildfires. And I said, this is North Carolina. You know, the bill was passed unanimously, you know, no dissent. And then today, you know, so that was the pleasure and what North Carolina is all about. And then we got into this bill, House Bill 17, And to me, this is the pain that we have, the pain about North Carolina. Because what this bill does, you know, seems to be an extraordinary abuse of, you know, power. And also, it seems to be a disregard for what the people want. And I hope that we, you know, today, as a body, that we think about that. And I hope that we muster up the strength and the integrity to stand for democracy. And I hope we vote the bill down, because that's the pain if we pass this. This is pain. I think if we pass this bill, this is just another way to say to the people of North Carolina, we really don't care what you think. And I know that you don't believe that. So there is no reason to pass this bill. You know, I just hope that we remember that people went out election day and they voted for all of us. They voted for us because they believed in us, and they also voted for us because they felt that we would represent their interests. It just so happened on election day that we elected a new governor. And I know a lot of people were disappointed, but we were all disappointed in one way or another on election day. But since we have a new governor, I think we should treat that governor like we treated the governor we had before. This bill says everything different. You know, since you are not my governor, even though you're elected, but I'm going to treat you differently. And I'm going to make sure that you don't have the same privileges that the previous governor had. I think this is wrong. And I say to you, please, you know, think about your conscience and think about who you're here to represent and vote no on this bill. Thank you.
What purpose does the lady from Wake, Representative Holly, rise?
Speak on the bill.
The lady has the floor to debate the bill.
Tonight I have a real heavy heart. As a career state employee for over 25 years, I worked very hard to work for whatever governor who was in charge. I feel that the dismantling of state government is a violent assault on this institution of the General Assembly, as well as the state of North Carolina. And we need to be held accountable for it. And we will be held accountable for it. But it will be a lot more damage than you anticipate. The damage is not just the damage of somebody getting a job and somebody else not getting a job. The damage is to the morale of our workers that we're then going to turn around and ask to serve the state of North Carolina in many ways they've not been able to do before. We are asking people to step up to the plate and do a job that they see someone else walk into with no experience and no skills. We see inequity in salaries. We're seeing a lot of things happen on a daily basis, and this bill only adds to the pain of the citizens of North Carolina. So tonight I'm very heavy-hearted, and I think about Kool-Aid. Because sometimes you might add, you know, we got some other bills out here floating that sounds good, you know. We got one, I think there's one out here floating to give state employees a pay raise, you know. Well, I learned a long time ago when my mother gave me sugar to try to take the medicine. That a little bit of sugar makes the medicine go down, but sometimes you throw it right back up. And that's how I feel about this bill. I cannot vote for this bill.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Durham, Representative Layman, rise?
Speak on the bill.
The gentleman has the floor to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We've had a very genteel debate tonight, but I don't want it to overshadow what we're hearing from all over the state, and that is the legitimate anger of the people about the actions of this General Assembly. I'm not speaking just about the protesters that were here tonight. I'm sure all of you have received emails. I've heard estimates ranging from about 1,200 to 2,000. I have gotten 3,000. Well, I've gotten a bunch of them. Some of the people I know, they're all different people from all walks of life, Republicans too, Democrats, professional people, office holders, and they're all speaking with one unified message, that this process has been unfair, it has shut out the public, is bringing great discredit on this fine, venerable institution. People feel that they were not given notice, that these bills were not given sufficient due process, and it has all the appearance of a vendetta against a newly elected governor. Much of this bill is about circumscribing his authority. I have not heard any serious justification for that, and I've heard no justification as to why this bill is urgent and has to be enacted this week. The people feel that this General Assembly came into session to deal with hurricane relief. We did that. Everybody applauded. It brought credit to the institution. It brought credit to the bipartisan spirit of this body. But we've dissolved all that and ruined it by moving it on. So I implore all my colleagues, let's move on, adjourn, or at least carry this over to the full session in 6 weeks. Thank you.
For what purpose does the lady from Franklin, Representative Richardson, rise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, to speak on the bill.
The lady has the floor to debate the bill.
Ladies and gentlemen, I serve the county in which is the hometown of the governor that has been elected, Governor Roy Cooper, and I feel that I must stand and defend the people who voted for him and his hometown members who worked diligently and very hard day and night to ensure that they elected a governor that would serve them and serve them well. We are not talking about a man who has 2 years of experience doing a particular job or only 2 years of experience on another particular job. We're talking about a man that has served in various capacities in state government and has served well. So we do not have a child coming into the governor's office. We have a very qualified man that should be able to make the decisions for this state without the General Assembly holding his hand. We heard tonight that it is the constitutional right of the General Assembly to do what we're doing. So I asked, if that is the case, does that null and void all the people that were placed prior to this governor's election in state government in any exempt position because they were not confirmed by the Senate? So will we have those people to reapply and come before the Senate to be confirmed if the governor chooses to nominate them? I think what we are doing to our governor-elect Roy Cooper is very disrespectful, but I think more so than that, we are telling the citizens of North Carolina the same thing that you told us in this chamber several times. We are the majority, and we can do what we want to do to you, and there's nothing you can do about it. We took people out of the chamber this afternoon in what we call makeshift cuffs, handcuffs. Is that the way we want to treat the citizens of North Carolina who exercise their right to vote to elect a governor with the expectation that this governor would be able to govern this state in the manner that all other governors had been given the right to do so? I thank you for your time, and I will vote against this bill. Thank you.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question before the House is the passage of House Bill 17 on its second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. The clerk will lock the machine and record the vote. 70 having voted in the affirmative and 36 in the negative. House Bill 17 passes its second reading. It will be read a third time.
Gentleman from North Carolina next.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Durham, Representative Hall, rise?
Speak on the bill.
The gentleman is recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And again, I renew the objection to taking up this legislation and the objection to this session for failure to notice the public for whom we work, our citizens for whom we go out and make the promises to. But I do just want to make one note for everyone concerned. Two of the most outstanding authorities we have on government in North Carolina, in the history of the state, one Democrat and one Republican, who would certainly have great experience in making appointments, both two-term governors, one having served four terms, have come out against this bill saying it's too much of a restriction on executive power. So if Governor Martin and Governor Hunt can see that this is inappropriate and against the best interest of North Carolina, combining all the years of service they put in and all the troubles they worked through for North Carolina, certainly you would think we could do the same. But we should not be here. We're here unconstitutionally, and we should not be doing this, which does great damage to our Constitution and our state. I'd ask you to vote against the bill.
What purpose does the gentleman from Union, Representative Arprise,
to speak to the bill?
The gentleman has the floor to debate the bill.
Colleagues, ladies and gentlemen, I appreciate your indulgence. I would like to respond from my perspective. I've heard a lot from the opposition. I know that I've heard from many people across the North Carolina to keep the hurricane session separate and non-politicized. And I certainly respected that wish, and that's why I signed on for the call to do this business in an extra session, a different session. And I believe it's because of matters that are very important and timely to the people of North Carolina. I believe we're properly constituted according to the state's constitution. Three-fifths of the House members and the Senate conveyed properly the call to transact important and timely business. And, in fact, members from both sides of the aisle file bills, both in the hurricane session that we just finished and in this session, because they believed, evidently, those matters are important and timely. I'm intrigued by the logic that's been portrayed, that out of one side of the mouth it's been said that people don't have enough time to understand the bill, debate the bill, and yet it's proclaimed that we've had an overwhelming number of people outraged and ask us to vote against this bill. Those two are not congruous. And in fact, I too had a lot of calls, some supporting what we're doing, some certainly against it. But I also believe in a fundamental policy that our statutes and law should reflect as accurately and closely as our state and national constitution. And I believe that this bill does that. And I can't think of a more timely approach than in the peaceful transfer of power during our election and after our election, especially as it relates to McGrory v. Berger and the realities of the new court decisions and other things that we should provide for an orderly transition and respect for separation of powers and constitutional authorities. And that's what this bill does. It's been said that this bill is just overwhelming in its breadth and depth, but really it's really simple. It's really simple. It has four parts to it. Let me reflect on that. It clarifies the role of the DPI and the State Board of Education. The election elected a new superintendent of public instruction. Certainly the first that I remember of a different party than what has been held. How important it is for us to clarify prior to that and so that no harm is done in the delay of establishing that. Part two, it talks about the UNC Board of Trustees and how they're appointed, and that's certainly covered in our state constitution, Article 9, Section 8. Part three talks about confirmation of cabinet appointees. Of of appointees, and that our Constitution certainly reflects that in Article 3, Section 5-8. And Part 4 talks about a task force for safer schools. My goodness, how important and timely is that? When is that not ever an urgent matter? And for these simple reasons, I've heard from my constituents. I know their perspective on this. I've certainly had time and understand the process, and have heard from an outpouring of citizens their view on this. And so I dispute and reject the thought and notion that this is anything rushed or hurried, anything out of the ordinary. In fact, this has had a tremendous outcry and public support on what we're doing. And I, for the records, am going to support this, because it's the right thing for us to do to clarify in a peaceful transition of power those important things that we should be doing. And I urge my colleagues to vote for this bill as well.
What purpose does the gentleman from Wake, Representative Martin, rise?
Mr. Speaker, I believe I rise to a question of the privilege of the House.
The gentleman may speak to a question of privilege, pursuant to Rule 8.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I notice that the gallery is still empty. I believe that is the case because the doors have been locked and barred the public from entry. So my question is, why, when the statutes of North Carolina require that, quote, each official meeting of a public body shall be open to the public and any person is entitled to attend such a meeting, end quote, are the doors still locked and why is the public still barred?
The chair would appoint the gentleman to Rule 53 of those same rules the gentleman is citing, and would deem, based upon the fact that even after the chair asked members to leave, there was tapping on the window, noise out there. And the chair, the chair does not believe for a moment that once folks come back in, that they will not once again create a disturbance at this point. So those doors shall remain closed.
Mr. Speaker,
for what purpose does the gentleman rise?
A question of privilege of the House.
The gentleman may state his question of privilege.
Or perhaps, Mr. Speaker, if you think it's more appropriate, a parliamentary inquiry.
The gentleman may state his parliamentary inquiry.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Speaker, is it the position the rules of this House preempt the North Carolina General Statutes?
The chair would point out that this is an open meeting, that this audio is being broadcast fully outside, both right outside these doors, on the Internet, and in every way there is. It is a meeting that was duly noticed under our laws, under the state constitution, under our House rules, and that in order to maintain the decorum of this body, because of a public outburst that continued and disrupted the work of this House for nearly a half hour, that in order to continue to do the people's business, that this needs to happen at this point. And it is unfortunate that lawbreakers want to come into this gallery and disrespect the state and disrespect this institution by conducting themselves in such a manner. It also poses, frankly, a safety issue. I don't know if the gentleman was able to see, but the chair was. A number of the folks, when the police officers asked him to leave, resisted. That's a tight space up there. That's a very tight space, and it's a high area. You've got officers up there risking their safety to try to get people to simply leave who simply want to get arrested. So as a result of that, for the safety of them, safety of the members on this floor, and the dignity of this House, those doors shall remain barred. And the speaker will speak to a point of personal privilege as a matter to the matter of dignity of the House. You know, this is the most open building in state government. This building is more open than courthouses around this state. You don't walk through a single metal detector when you walk in this place. You can come and go freely. We like it that way because it's the people's house, because people can get here and they can come see their members. But unfortunately, there are members of there are folks who are here tonight who not only disrespected the institution, but other members of the public who wanted to be here, who created a safety hazard, who disrupted this chamber by yelling and screaming and conducting themselves with clearly an intent to create a public disturbance and stop a meeting of this House. They didn't just interfere with the rights of this body, but they interfered with the rights of the 9 million North Carolinians who elected us to be here to do our jobs.
And so I believe it's appropriate, and I'll say this. I think that the members of the minority party, the members of the majority party, the folks on this floor have conducted themselves properly. While we may disagree with this issue, I think every member on here, from what I've seen, has conducted themselves properly and expressed their opinion as they're elected to do. But that's where this needs to happen. It does not need to happen with a public spectacle and disrupting this meeting happening in this gallery. And I regret that it happened. It shouldn't happen. This has been a recent trend in the last few years, and it just shouldn't happen. And I think it shows disrespect not only to the institution, but frankly to the voters of this state who sent those of us here to be here working to do the people's work, not to be interrupted with this kind of stuff. For what purpose does the gentleman from Nash, Representative Collins, rise?
To debate the bill.
The gentleman has the floor to debate the bill.
Well, since two of our former governors were referenced, I'd like to make a statement about that. It was during the
actually, the gentleman will suspend, and I do want to answer the gentleman's question. I would refer the gentleman to our rules under Mason's legislative procedure. Rules of legislative procedure are derived from several sources and take precedence in the order listed below. The principal sources are as follows: constitutional provisions and judicial decisions thereon, adopted rules, custom usage and precedents, statutory provisions, which would be the open meetings law, adopted parliamentary authority, and parliamentary authority. The gentleman from Nash continues to have the floor to debate.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Two governors were mentioned in one of the preceding remarks. I'd just like to remind you of the fact that under the first of those, Governor Hunt, state law was changed that allowed the governor for the first time in our history to succeed himself. And, of course, Governor Hunt succeeded himself not once but three times and served four terms. Under Governor Martin, the governor of North Carolina for the first time was given the veto power, although it did not apply to him. It applied to his successor. Under Governor Hunt's term, if you remember, he also wound up packing the appellate court, a move that, you know, we've been charged we're going to do with the Supreme Court, although there's been no substance to that. All of these things, of course, in enhancing the power of the executive branch, lowered the power of the legislative branch. Now, when I go home in the evenings, people see me pumping gas. They see me in the morning at Dunkin' Donuts getting coffee. They see me different places around town. There's no doubt that our legislators are the closest state officials to their electorate, and we have to get elected every 2 years. People don't see the governor. They don't know the governor. They don't get to walk up to the governor pumping gas in Rocky Mount or in your hometown and talk to them about issues that they have with state government. So I think anything we can do to restore a little bit of the authority to the legislature that they gave up largely in the 1980s is making a corrective action to partially rebalance what I think is a state government that's been way out of kilter. I think our framers had it right when most of the powers were vested in the legislature, as it is in our state constitution if you read it. State constitution is what's been referenced as what gives us the authority to name the trustees, for instance. But I think anything we can do to kind of balance the scales a little bit back in that direction is a good move. So I would ask you to vote green on this bill.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question before the House is the passage of House Bill 17 on its third reading. The chair is going to elect to do an electronic vote on third reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. The clerk will lock the machine and record the vote. 70 having voted in the affirmative and 36 in the negative. House Bill 17 passes its third reading, is ordered engrossed, and sent to the Senate by a special messenger.